Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today, the franchise spotlight is on Pete Durand of NetCertive. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey, Northeast Color, and Franchise Payments Network. If you're looking for something buzzworthy to reward your customers, Pollinate is an all-inclusive loyalty and gift card technology company focused on the franchise space. Powered by Franchise Payments Network, they work with your team to create a reward system that engages your customers, boosts sales, and boosts frequency. With Pollinate, franchise systems enjoy a 17% ticket lift and a 50% increase in customer visits for those enrolled in the program. With Pollinate, everybody will earn, redeem, enjoy, and repeat. To learn more, check out Pollinate at pollinate.com/marketing. Pete Durand is the CRO of NetCertive and the host of the Eating Crow podcast. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Jack, thanks. It's great to be here.
So we're going to get into some digital marketing trends that you're seeing in franchising. But first, give me a little bit of your background. What's your story?
Well, I'm a frustrated engineer trapped in a salesperson's body.
Wow. I know a lot of guys just like you.
Yes.
I'm a frustrated DJ trapped in a salesperson's body, I think.
Well, you found the right niche in podcasting. You have the silky tones of a true podcaster, Jack. So it's a joy to be here.
You're my new best friend. Thank you for that. So you were an engineer or studied to be an engineer?
I did. I went to undergrad in engineering and quickly realized that no one had my sense of humor. And I, my dad was an engineer, and I called him one night and I said, "Dad, I really think I'm a fish out of water here." He said, "Look, get an engineering degree. It'll never hurt you. And then go sow your oats, you know, wherever you need to." So it was good advice. I got an MBA a few years later, and having the engineer does allow a little bit of credibility in the room when people are looking for that. But I've always been more of a relationship person and a problem solver on a different kind. So the background's helpful, but you know, even doing podcasting has allowed me to tap in more of the relationship creative side.
You know, I had someone a few years ago tell me that I was a engineer. I had the soul of an engineer, but instead of chemicals or mechanics or electronics, I was an engineer of people. Mm-hmm. So I think that might kind of fit into the sales and marketing side of what you're doing as well, you know, kind of putting people together and, you know, building systems of people and relationships.
Well, we call it the dark side of the force.
There's much power on the dark side.
There's a lot of power. It's very tempting. Our operations and engineering people don't like it when I get too close to their people because I'm constantly recruiting. Mm. So I can tell them there's a lot of hate in you, and I can release that hate over the sales side of the force. So it is fun. I think when you're on the sales and marketing side of the business, you tend to relate to customers a little differently, and you have to put yourself in their shoes and try to solve the problem, not necessarily with your solution, right? And I think that's a challenge a lot of salespeople forget, is that sometimes your solution may not be the right solution. And you can establish a lot of trust with customers if you're truly there to help them solve a problem.
So you exited the engineering world rather quickly. And then what was sort of your next move after that?
Well, it's probably a fairly common story. I was an engineer at a paper mill and moved up to operations and was being pursued by a lot of salespeople for their products and services for the plant I was at. And it was remarkable. Let's say of the five or six salespeople, four of them were horrid, just terrible, but they were making a living at it. And there was one gentleman that I worked with that, you know, he'd walk into our plant with his suit and tie. And if we had something that was a problem, he'd roll his sleeves up, tuck his tie into his shirt and crawl under a machine to try to solve it for me.
Nice.
And I thought that is the kind of person I want to work with. So I spent more time discovering what his background was, what he was doing for a living. And that really sparked my first interest in, by the way, seeing a different part of the world. I'm out, I'm traveling, I'm in the world, and I'm with different customers. So I was fascinated by that aspect of it. And you know, I interviewed for a product manager job at a company just to get into marketing. And the guy looks at me and goes, you have absolutely no experience in sales and marketing. I said, well, if in the next 8 1-hour interviews, I can't convince you to sell you the shirt off your own back, then don't hire me.
Perfect.
So I proceeded to, and the rest they say is history. So.
Got it. And then when did you come to NetCertive?
Interesting story. So I had started my own health and fitness app startup almost exactly the same time that NetCertive began. And one of the founders of NetCertive was an associate of mine through Motorola Ventures, a Chicago-based company.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So they backed both of our companies. We got to know each other. He had an exit. I had an exit. And I started this business. And he called and said, I've got this thing that's working. They hadn't even named it NetCertive yet. I'd like you to come run it with me. And I said, look, I'm running my own thing. It's going to be great. So, you know, we did our own things for a while. We actually shared resources and put people in different companies. And 2 years ago, I was looking to try something different. And we reconnected. And he said, I think it's time for you to come over to NetCertive and help the business really kind of move to the next level of its growth. And it couldn't have been better. That it's one of the best assemblies of people I've ever worked with. I mean, truly just wonderful people from top to bottom who really are passionate about digital marketing. So it's been a blast ever since I got here.
Very cool. So you do a lot of digital marketing there with multi-location organizations and a lot specifically in franchising, right?
That is correct. Our platform allows us to help people scale their marketing efforts around a specific location, which is challenging for a franchisor or a large retail brand with locations and resellers across the country. Digital marketing up until I'd say till we kind of got there was really focused on regional campaigns or kind of set it, forget it, blanket type marketing campaigns. And we figured out some technology that allowed us to do it really, really precise at the location level.
And really getting down into that, as we refer to it as the hyper local end of digital marketing. Mm-hmm. What kinds of day-to-day things are you doing for these franchisors and franchisees? Is it websites and pay-per-click and social and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we don't focus on the website aspect. What we've discovered is that most of these groups have a website partner, and it's not, in our opinion, where the transaction takes place. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of the process. SEO is important there, but we focus on creating what I'll call a really productive landing page within that website.
Hmm.
So it allows us, you know, here's the challenge when you're working with a large national franchise and they have a website, for us to get in and ask to adjust the website's a big deal.
Yeah.
But if we create an individual landing page that doesn't really affect anything else, it allows us to be much more nimble, move to a solution a lot faster, and then control the place where that customer eventually ends up and does the conversion.
You know, I like that a lot because A, there are how many website companies in the United States right now?
Many, many, many.
And how many of those focus on or have some sort of package for franchise systems? Because, you know, it's a great industry to be in. Lots, sure. Right? Mm-hmm. But for me as a franchisor to change my website and the websites for all of my franchisees, yuck, right? Like, yeah. I don't want to be involved in an 18-month long project right now for something that probably works okay. You know, I think especially in this fabulous year, franchisors making a massive change and going to, you know, an entirely new structure and blowing everything up when it's not maybe necessary. I love the idea that you guys are working through landing pages. Are these, and now I'm going to start getting a little geeky here. So,
sure.
So let's stay, just give me a minute on this. Are these landing pages part of the brand's website, like as a subfolder, or do they all connect somehow, or what do you recommend there?
We prefer if it's actually part of their website as a /, or a subdomain.
Oh, cool.
You know, it helps them drive organic traffic. We definitely can host it ourselves if we need to, but more often than not, we can help them structure it so that it can just be, you know, a /, or a subdomain. So it could be, you know, www.Pete's, you know, Pottery Barn, mm-hmm. /Raleigh, North Carolina.
Perfect. I like that structure. I know, That's been kind of an area of controversy on, you know, should it be separate websites? Should it be subfolders, you know, in the franchise system? And someday I want to get a bunch of people on here and have a big debate over it. So tell me maybe some other things you guys are doing with franchisors and franchisees right now. Lots of stuff on search and social, that sort of thing too.
Right. I think it's an area where we're starting to see our customers, our partners have to think more multi-channel. You know, our customers aren't simply, you know, searching something and driving into a transaction. They're spending a lot more time researching. They're spending their time in multiple different social channels and networks. So depending if it's B2C, B2B, that maybe, you know, changes our thought process. But one of our value propositions is understanding, hey, maybe Google search is performing really, really well on this particular product or service in this particular location. But in this location, in this product, YouTube is really crushing it, or Facebook. And, you know, Google and YouTube don't want you moving money from other platforms into Facebook. So there's a natural battle to keep it, but you might. So our objective is not to funnel money into a specific network or channel. Our objective is to funnel money into the best return on your investment. And we've developed some really powerful, I'll call, configuration tools that allow us to do that, manipulation and tuning tools, and then reporting tools that really sit down and say, hey, let's strategize the best way to drive an outcome.
Does that change more than it used to as far as, you know, wow, look, all of this YouTube stuff is really performing. Let's take another look there, and maybe something on another channel isn't working as well. It seems like that sort of analysis used to be a 6 to 12 month long view. Does that change quicker now or more frequently?
It does. In fact, I think we are seeing some surprise data in networks or channels we would have expected to be only top of the funnel and drive awareness, but that are actually driving conversions.
Interesting.
So in fact, to the point where our data scientists are like, this can't be right, which is always fun, right? And they, no, we check the data. It's right.
Yeah. I don't care if it's not, if you don't think it's not right, the customer just got some sales. So it's good. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think where we're seeing that trend, that transformation take place is, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the majority of search traffic, 80% plus, was basically just search, discover, find. And now it's flipped. Most of the transactions you see are product listing ads or shopping ads. So I'm searching for something. I see the product listed. I see the price where I can buy it. I click and I buy it.
And that kind of goes back to our conversation about websites and having landing pages, but not necessarily redoing every company's website every year. Remember when companies used to do that? Because I still argue that, man, how long until your website is just not the place where anyone buys anything anymore?
Yeah.
You know, the only website that matters is google.com.
Well, it is interesting. You know, healthcare is trying to make that big leap right now. Their analogy is, we want to make booking an appointment as easy as booking a flight.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, there are organizations that have spent years developing that technology to book a flight and make it seamless. So they've got a ways to go. I think the real challenge for, and you have to think about a product franchise versus a service franchise.
Yeah.
The blend between serving a customer locally versus serving a customer online, those lines are blurred. And in, you know, March 15th, 2020, you can mark your calendar when that really became an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially with food ordering, pizza, you know, things like that. How many people are actually going to the Domino's or PizzaHut.com website to order a pizza right now? So
yeah, complete disruption in that entire industry.
So that's a disruption. What other big things are you seeing, and maybe some challenges that the franchise brands you're working with are sharing with you right now?
It's interesting. The challenges that they're facing still are rooted in, I'll call, attribution. So an outdated website structure, a poorly constructed landing page theme, means that they're flying a bit blind and they're frustrated. They're spending, you know, we have some franchises who at a location level will range anywhere between $1,000 a month in media to $50,000 a month. It's astonishing.
Wow.
Same franchise network.
Wow.
And, you know, we have developed landing page structures and data and reporting that allows them to see where every single lead came from and tie it back to a specific initiative so they can really have a strong understanding of the return, not only in their ad spend, but we drill down into their product costs, their sales structure, their margins, their sales cycle. So we're telling them what the return on investment is, which is a very different conversation. Mm-hmm. When they don't have that level of visibility, they become extremely frustrated and they kind of complain back up to the network level and say, hey, help us out here. And I think there, as you identified it earlier, that is a big problem. It's a big mess. Most people don't want to get into that level of detail with their partners.
But if you can identify something nice and easy, like, hey, look at what's working over here. Let's do more, right?
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Other challenges that people are facing right now, or maybe some things that you're seeing already for 2021, and you know, maybe kind of pointing out to some CMOs out there of some landmines that you see coming, or maybe opportunities too. Anything top of mind?
So I think some of the opportunities we see, I'll start there, are connected TV. So, you know, the amount of people that have cut the cord this year is astonishing. It's way up over the previous years.
Yeah.
So there's inventory out there that it's not being consumed. I don't know if you've watched YouTube TV or Hulu. There's, you'd be watching a sporting event and all of a sudden the screen kind of goes blank and there's the logo for ESPN. It says, thanks for watching. This is a commercial.
Yeah. You know, it's right? Kind of like the early days of cable.
Yeah.
Where there would be a spot break on CNN or something like mm-hmm. that. And it's like, oh, it's the just say no to drugs PSA again.
Yes.
For the third time this hour. Somebody didn't sell this spot.
So there's inventory out there that can be consumed. We've developed and we're just launching some really powerful technology that allows a national brand or a franchise to take an asset that they've produced, could be a really powerful TV ad or a YouTube ad, and deploy that in a local advertising fashion over these connected TV networks. So we can actually put up the local franchise name, phone number, et cetera, overlaid over that asset. And then we can retarget people based on what they've searched on their laptop in their home and vice versa. So if they were actually looking for a specific truck model or a specific mosquito service, we'll actually retarget that ad and actually present that in the next time they actually view that connected TV channel. It's astonishingly precise.
That's a winner. How many brands are you working with right now that are using that? Is it just a handful, kind of a test right now?
It is.
Or some people
we're in early tests right now. The CTV aspects are working pretty well, and now we're deploying it through the rest of our networks and tying into what we'll call dynamic retargeting. So, in fact, we have two very large customer meetings today to introduce that technology, along with some e-commerce things we're working on. So we're excited about kind of expanding our breadth of services for some of our largest clients, and the reaction so far has been very strong, just as you described. Wow, that's compelling, because most of the time at the top of the funnel for a traditional TV ad, you know, you're looking for impressions or views, and it's hard to monetize, hard to understand. Well, we can drive it much farther down in the funnel into the lower aspects, which really changes the game.
That's really impressive. And thanks for sharing that, because I think as we head into the winter, and who knows where we're going to be over the next 6 months, pandemic wise or lockdown wise in some parts of the country, I can't see YouTube television and other digital content actually being consumed less over the next year or so. So
it is going to continue to increase, as you described. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's amazing. Any other trends you're spotting for 2021, or any other things that CMOs should be watching for these days?
You know, I think it has to do with scale, right? So when you think of the amount of resources you have to deploy a digital campaign across an entire network, our objective is to help them feel like they've actually built a closer relationship with their franchisees than they've ever had before, because they're sharing data. So to me, that's the biggest trend, is this open data sharing. So we're connecting into more CRM systems. We're pulling data in and understanding exactly when somebody comes in through a lead, through a landing page, how they're processed. And that's just opening up a lot more what I'll call tuning and optimization that drives just higher returns. I don't think those relationships were real comfortable or existed, but we love sitting at the table and kind of brokering those discussions between the franchisor and the franchisee and seeing the light bulbs go off and saying, wow, we can really do something here.
I like the idea of doing that with CRM systems and not trying to create the next Salesforce, right? Where it's a CRM right. system that tries to do all of these marketing tactics and put it all together all under one roof. Because, you know, I always say when people want, you know, one piece of technology to do everything, it's like trying to get a plumber who's also an electrician, who's also a carpenter.
And, exactly.
You know, I love the idea of focusing on what you guys are really great at with a great CRM and maybe some other tools that can work together. I think that's absolutely the future. Okay, Pete, I want to ask about my favorite thing that you're involved in. You've got a podcast called Eating Crow. First of all, I just like the name. So tell me about this podcast.
Well, thank you. It's been a labor of love. So I never thought I'd start a podcast, but earlier in the year, I was with one of our VPs of sales and we were traveling back from a customer. And this is a customer we had lost. We were trying to win them back. And we sat there for 2.5-3 hours while, you know, we had Eat Crow. They basically told us how wrong we were. And they were correct. We were missing some things they were looking for, realigned our thought process. You know, this was an old customer, had them for a long time. And their needs changed, our platform changed, that we hadn't aligned properly. So on the way back, we're in the car and I just pulled up my phone and said, I'm not really ever comfortable doing this, but let's shoot a quick video about how we eat crow today.
Oh,
so
nice.
I put it on LinkedIn and it went viral. It got a pretty good strong reaction. And a lot of people reached out and said, if you did a podcast on that, I'd listen to it every day. So I kind of ignored it. And then you'll appreciate this, Jack. You know, you've been doing this for a while. I sat down in June of 2020 and Googled, how do I start a podcast? So I literally pulled out, I'm an engineer, so I pulled out a Google sheet and listed the top 25 things you have to do to start it. And I started checking them off. And my objective was to be live in about 30 to 60 days. And I've got almost 20 episodes out there, another 30 to 50 in production, and have been just amazed at the response. And, you know, some of the stretch guests, you understand this, like these are people I put down that wouldn't it be great if I could have so-and-so in the podcast?
Right, right.
And they're starting to say yes, which is really exciting for me.
It's very cool that you made that plan and got so much content and so many episodes put together. We talk to people all the time here who are starting a podcast and, you know, what happens, life gets in the way or business mm-hmm. takes a turn and, you know, then they put it off and a year goes by and they haven't done another episode.
Yeah. So, that podcast fade, they call it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So kudos on keeping forward. I think there's something about just having a cadence, whether you do it mm-hmm. once a week or twice a week or 5 times a week. Whatever your pattern is, you know, you're kind of hitting those beats and just keeping up with it. And some people will stay with you, and just kudos on doing that. I see you on Apple Podcasts and I see you on Spotify. I assume we can find it on all of the other usual places as well.
We can. And we also have a YouTube channel.
Oh,
so
cool.
People can look at my ugly face as I interview highly talented people. And it's, you know, you, Jack, I was serious. When I've listened, for me to pick this up, I've listened to other people that have been doing podcasts for a while. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. You try to pick mm-hmm. up what they're doing better. And there are some really horrid podcasts out there. And there are some really good ones. So, you know, and the other thing that you've done really, really well is you understand your audience. You've got a very focused audience. You know who they are. You're delivering valuable content to them. And that's what people miss. This whole concept of valuable content is important. My wife, this is a funny story. My wife asked me last night, she said, what's your goal with this thing? You spent a lot of late nights doing it and weekends mm-hmm. doing it. What's mm-hmm. the plan? And I said, look, I'm not here to make money at this. It's really hard to make money doing a podcast. My objective is to put content out there, build a brand, and then we'll see what happens. And I'm listening to the audience. They're telling me what I should be posting, what they like, what they don't like. And I'm refining the message. You know, our objective is to reach leaders and entrepreneurs and help them be better at their jobs.
That's a great way to look at it. You know, starting with, as Simon Sinek always tells us, start with the why. Like, yes, why sir. Are you doing this? Not what are you doing? Well, I do a podcast about franchising. Mm-hmm. Well, why are you doing it? And And to me, it comes back to connecting with people, that original idea that we were talking about several minutes ago of being an engineer of relationships and, mm-hmm. and bringing people together. And I like that you have this focus on people telling their story about eating crow, because mm-hmm. A, it's something everybody can relate to, but you're really talking about specific stories. You know, it isn't just, hey, you know, tell me your life story. Cause here's the problem. You hear that on a podcast all the time. No one cares.
No one
cares about somebody's life story, or even for a brand, even for a brand that I like. I don't care that they were founded in 1963 and they moved from, you know, Milwaukee to Chicago or whatever. And it's like, that doesn't matter to anybody. What people want to hear is why you're doing something, and what makes your story more interesting than the billion other podcasts that I could have downloaded a few.
You're years so ago. Right. And I enjoy the interviews, and I even enjoy the editing. It's fascinating to me. Yeah. I had a guest on this past week, and we were trying to understand why he, and by the way, this is an engineer that felt a call to teach engineers how to present technical product. So very specific value proposition.
Yeah. And a very valuable thing, because 95% of the engineers that I know, that's where they struggle.
Exactly. And you know, he's in Copenhagen and we're having this discussion. So he tapped into a story that, quite frankly, we found at the end of the podcast that blew me away. Because, you know, storytelling is a big part of what we do. That's the part of making a presentation compelling. He described bringing home a test grade to his father and his father not being satisfied. I mean, this is the Cliff Notes version of the theme of the story. Uh-huh. But as he told it, he described the house. He described the cobblestone street. He just described where his father was standing, what the sky looked like. And I said, Asger, I'm literally in the scene with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I like about podcasting, is you can kind of paint this picture mm-hmm. that, you know, if you're doing a video only thing, you probably don't see it as well, oddly enough. And the fact that he could describe it that well, that day made a little bit of an impact on him, didn't it?
It certainly did. It made an impact on me. And then you swing to the other side of the fence. I had another guest, extremely talented gentleman. And editing has been a luxury for me because I have a 70-hour week full-time job. So,
you know,
this one, as I'm filming it and recording, and I thought, I'm going to have to edit this, right? And it took me 3 hours to edit that episode. And the sad part is I basically cut out all of me.
I would do the same thing though. It's like,
yeah, Jack, I was horrible.
Me anytime.
Yeah. I was horrible. I mean, you know, there are some that are a natural flow. It's a very even conversation. This one was, he's very, very articulate, and I was pulling in information in different ways. And I wasn't on my game, and I finished up and my wife said, you just look, you got beat up. I said,
oh yeah.
I sucked for 3 hours. So yeah, it was a great afternoon.
That's awesome. I love that story. So it is the Eating Crow podcast. Everybody go check it out. Subscribe today on your favorite podcast platform, and can't wait to see more of that. Pete Durand, the CRO of NetCertiv, thank you for being here today. If people want to ask you a few more questions about anything you discussed, where can we send them and where can they learn about NetCertiv?
Certainly. If they'd like to reach out to me, it's just LinkedIn. I'm Pete Durand at LinkedIn, and NetCertiv.com is our company's website. So certainly you can reach anybody there if you'd like help, you know, helping your franchise reach more people. That's really what we do.
And now it's time for the Health and Safety Spotlight, brought to you by Northeast Color. Every week, we're looking at and sharing stories of franchise brands making a difference in health and safety during and after the pandemic. Sport Clips Haircuts has rolled out the Sport Clips Certified Clean Program, a requirement for all stylists. This means the stylist has completed training courses on cleaning, disinfection, and sanitation specific to COVID-19. Also, every stylist is required to complete a wellness check and must be cleared before beginning a shift. Along with an update in services offered, changes in store layouts, and online check-ins, Sport Clips is keeping customers and teams safe. If you have stories about how your franchise system is keeping everyone healthy and safe, let us know. We'll share them here thanks to our friends at Northeast Color. Northeast Color is offering franchise systems help with social distancing floor decals, signs and window decals, suspended partitions for the front desk or workout stations, parking lot signage, and hand sanitizer pedestals with signage, all fully branded and customized for your franchisees. Learn more now at northeastcolor.com. And thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. We're here to help you get yourself ready for the comeback of a lifetime. Copyright 2020, Social Geek Enterprises, Inc.